This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to this middle of the summer.
Oh, God.
Episode
of My Favorite Murder.
The podcast.
The podcast that's on vacation.
That's right. So, what are we doing talking to you here? Well, we missed you guys.
We miss you deeply. We're sorry to be away.
Yeah.
We're coming back.
Yeah.
But in this way that's.
We just needed a minute. It's like we're having a moment. We were so fucking overwhelmed, and I feel better already.
Oh, my God. You should see my skin.
It's glowing. Greenish. It's got a greenish hue.
I'm sweating and I've starred in Chernobyl. Yeah. So we decided we would do a new recording so that if you missed us, you wouldn't be mad anymore.
Yeah. So we're going to do a Q&A episode specifically about the book. And on the fan cult, a bunch of people wrote in on the forum questions about the book. We haven't seen them.
Yeah. We're just going to read off of paper that we haven't looked at. But
that's the level of vacation we're on.
Yeah. We're kind of come in and read off a piece of paper level. Oh, yeah. That's what we always do. But first of all, can we just say thank you so much for the overwhelming feedback and support for this book.
Yes.
We've said it a million times, but it was hard to write. It was hard to release, mm-hmm. like expose ourselves. And we knew you'd be there for us, but I was definitely surprised at the amount of positive feedback and people saying that they loved it is so lovely.
It is.
It's really
overwhelming. We feel so grateful that we got you guys to support us because you're so supportive.
Yeah.
And that was a really hard thing to do.
You're supportive of our dirty little secret.
Yeah.
Thank you. You're like the best moms ever.
Can we turn that light off? Or can we read? Yeah. Let's get in the mood.
Ooh, yeah.
The moodiness.
Stephen, light the disco ball as we read your questions about our book, Stay Sexy, Don't Get Murdered, featuring Paul Giamatti.
That's right.
That's now the full official title, by the way.
Do you want to go first?
Sure.
Ask me a question and we'll both answer it.
Okay, great. The first question on this piece of paper Stephen printed for us is from Zizi. Oh, I have plenty of questions, but the most pressing. To Karen, when did you join AA?
Oh.
You mentioned the trip to the hospital where you realized 12 drinks every night is 10 too many for a body to handle. I'm wondering how long between this realization and the start of AA and the journey in between that brought you there. So I'll stop there because now there's a to Georgia.
Okay.
But I'll stop there and answer it. I am not in AA. I try to tell people this when we do our meet and greets. I am not in a program. I stopped drinking because I started having seizures. And later, I joined a 12-step program for eating disorders, which helped me immensely. I've gone back to and dropped out of because, of course, it's very, very difficult. But I got a lot of recovery in that program. Have never gone to AA for quitting alcohol, but not because it was so simple, but because having seizures scared me so badly that for a long time I was like, I'm never going to drink again. I've had like a glass of champagne at weddings here and there over the years because it's been since 1997, but it always makes me sick or I get drunk really fast in a weird way and then don't like it.
I think it's really cool. And I always have that you make sure to tell people that you are not in the program. You don't want to like, you're not trying to trick anyone being like, I'm sober Karen. You're really straightforward about what worked for you.
Yes.
What works for you. And it doesn't, you know, that might not work for, that probably won't work for most people who have alcohol problems.
Right.
But you're open and clear about it. I think that's cool.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's a big thing. And I think if you are in a place where you feel like you need help and it's out of your control, I absolutely recommend 12-step programs because the structure and the community, it makes you see that this is a thing that you can let go of.
And you're not alone.
Yes, exactly. It's very common and there's lots of people there with good help. Yeah. But yeah, I've never claimed to be an AA for that. Probably the misunderstanding is me talking about 12-step programs, and I was talking about the ones for eating disorders, which also have a lot of great help.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my journey.
Cool.
To Georgia, is there another author that you would love to meet? Loved how your passion for reading was present throughout the book. Absolutely jealous you had the best chance to meet Ray Bradbury, legend. You guys are the bestest. You too, Stephen, in parentheses.
My other favorite author is Douglas Adams, who wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. He's also deceased. So, you know, this is a who would you have dinner with kind of like game.
Living or dead, sure.
Yeah. And he is just so hilarious and funny with that British wit and sense of humor. I highly recommend listening to the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy trilogy. Audiobooks, which he reads and are so fucking...
The author reads them himself?
Douglas Adams reads them.
Awesome.
He's so fucking cool and funny and entertaining. I would just cry meeting him.
Awesome.
Yeah. Okay, your turn. What reactions to the book being released have surprised you? Can we talk about my mom's reaction?
It's up to you.
This is from Kat. Also, do you think everyone has read your book, then immediately read Daring Greatly? Love you both so much. I think Brené Brown owes us royalties.
Yep.
And we're going to need...
an honorary doctorate.
That's right. And we're going to want our own TED Talk.
And we're going to...
And we're going to...
And I want to...
Love it! So my mom texts, but the weirdest reaction, I think, has been from my mom, who texts me and Karen on a thread together, how she has your number... I'm sorry.
I gave it to her.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
That said, Karen said, Georgia, I love this part of that you wrote, and then wrote, Karen, you don't know this, but you're a right winger because us right wingers have the same philosophy of you that lefties are lazy and need to pick themselves up off their own boot. What it was like, some rant about.
It was about being responsibility.
Right.
Essentially.
But against left wing people who are liberal, like you
like
and
us.
I.
Yes. Yeah.
And I got so fucking angry at her. I responded, mom, period. And then I got on a different thread with her and just fucking went off on her and was like, Karen wrote about her mother fucking dying of Alzheimer's and you have the like gall to call her, to like call that out. Anyways.
Just to make it political.
Make it political, which I've asked you not to do.
But I would say this.
Yeah. I mean, it's my mom, so of course I'm going to get mad.
It's your mom. And also, families always think, and when you're that close with people, they always think they can be the ones that say things. Because especially with parents, they always think they're smarter than you.
Right.
So they're like going to inform you about what you can't see about yourself.
Right.
And I think she was just trying to be... in it with us maybe a little
bit.
I don't know. I don't care.
I know you don't.
But I feel like so many people have been radicalized with this political thing, and there are people that are feeling things they haven't felt in years because they suddenly belong and everything's real clear and black and white and simple.
Right.
And
good
that's
and
when you know, if things are black and white and simple, that's when you know you're in a bad place.
Yeah.
Because
there's no nuance.
No, there's no context. There's no subtlety. There's no gradient. Could it be this or this?
That's a good point.
You know, and that's a lot of people are scared these days. I'm not making apologies for anybody. Absolutely. And I will say this, let's throw parents under the bus. My dad texted me after he read it and said, didn't tell me he was reading it, didn't say anything. And then all he texted me was, when were you a latchkey kid?
Oh, out of nowhere. Oh my God.
And I said, Dad, it's too late.
Yeah.
It's too late. This is not a discussion anymore.
Wow.
But I mean, it's funny. He's always had that a little bit of like, oh yeah, I don't know about how we did, you know. My parents just did what they had to do.
And what was done
parents,
at the time.
And what was very common.
Yeah.
But it was really funny because he was like, I thought latchkey meant that you didn't have parents and you were just in an apartment by yourself.
No, it's just light neglect is all it is.
Yes, exactly. It's just like everybody in the 80s who were just like, you know,
yeah.
Get home yourself, and if you can jump in a van on the way, so be it.
Okay, you want to ask a question?
Let's see. This one's from Bad Granny.
Okay.
I want to know more about how Karen and Georgia managed to maintain and apparently grow their friendship while also writing a book together. Man, I don't like group projects. And I don't know if any of my relationships would survive working with me on a long-term, important, deadline-driven writing project. Look, I know I'm the problem in these situations, but it's only because I am almost always right and usually belligerently wrong on those rare occasions when I might be wrong. How did they do it?
Bad Granny.
Bad Granny.
Great questions.
Such a good question.
We don't know. Do you know?
I feel like that's when we started going to therapy, right?
Right.
But it was also like if we were stacking up big responsibilities, that was like the third brick in the stack.
Yeah.
We were in the mode of make it work, get it done.
Yeah.
And I think the key to it was when we realized the book should be like the show and we should be writing our own essays.
Right.
Because no one writes a memoir together unless you have like a ghostwriter or something.
We have completely different writing styles, you know. And also I think that throughout the whole thing, the podcast and everything, is that it was so quickly successful that we kind of, there was no like backing down.
Right.
We both kind of knew we had to move forward and there was a good reason to, which is, you know, making it work.
Yes, that's right. And I think that we did go into therapy and talking stuff through, mm-hmm. for me anyway, it felt like that thing of like, we both knew that whatever the problems were in the interim, mm-hmm. big picture, we wanted it to work. We wanted to be happy and we wanted to take the success and not like basically what I was always afraid of, but also sabotage it.
Oh, right.
Where it's like, she made me quit or any of that bullshit that I've definitely done in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that sabotage thing is right. We have this amazing chance. This is the first, you know, this is what I've been praying for.
Yeah.
You can't fucking just walk away and be like, well, fuck you then, which is like my instinct all the time.
All the time.
Fuck everything.
Well, also it makes you start thinking and like, we won't get so far into it, but it also makes you go like, when you fight about things, what are you actually fighting about as opposed to the topic?
Yeah.
Because you're never fighting about the topic. Really.
Yeah. What is it really? It's always, it's like anger or hurt.
Hurt and control and fear.
Yeah.
And
fear. Yeah.
I don't like talking about any of those things or admitting to any of those things.
Me neither.
But we had to.
Oh, that makes you a righty. Okay. Well, here's another one. Was there ever a time in the last 3 years that the two of you almost called it quits because the relationship wasn't working? This was from Irish Amy 5. She says that's a lot of time together between podcasts, book writing, and touring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of time.
Yeah.
I feel like as angry as we've gotten at each other or like the fights that we've been in.
Yeah.
And I think it's always a power move to be like, I'm going to walk away. Like everybody has that ace up their sleeve always.
Totally.
We got a third party in to be the neutral negotiator early enough.
Yeah.
That was not no longer the card that was ever going to get played.
Right.
Was like, then fuck you then. Yeah. If you don't want to make the shirt I want, you know, or whatever.
Yeah. And then also it's like, you know, that walking away makes it your own fault kind of too. Or it's like, you just decided not to work on yourself anymore.
Yeah.
I think having Vince for me too, to like bitch to, and then for him to be the voice of reason to me as well, has been really helpful. And I'm sure, you know, who you bitch to has a level fucking head. Lizzie.
Jesus. Oh. The Lord on high.
Steven.
Yeah, that's true. You have to. Yeah, but you know what I was thinking recently too is, because we've talked about this before too, it would be a lot for a friendship.
Yeah.
But this basically, I feel like we skipped from acquaintanceship mm-hmm. to sisterhood.
We're totally sisters
We're
now.
We're sisters.
And it's almost like rougher because, you know, I could say anything to my fucking sister and guess what, bitch, you're still related to me.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
And which
that's
is good.
That's the situation we are in where it's kind of like, still have to do the show.
Right.
Still have to do the show. But it's good because I have all my life had the habit of walking away.
Yeah.
Of like, I'll fucking flip the table with the Monopoly set on it happily and ruin the rest of vacation.
Yeah.
Like, I love chaos and I love drama.
Yeah.
And so to be in a situation where it's that thing, and I'm sorry, but this is like the Ram Dass podcast I'm listening to all the time, you find your guru and you find the person that needs to teach you what you need to learn.
Yeah.
And that's how life goes, I believe.
Yeah.
So I just had to start going in my most stressed, in my most like using macaroni and cheese as drugs.
Ugh, yeah.
That's when I was like, what am I supposed to actually be? I'm supposed to be changing.
Right.
I'm not supposed to be holding the line. I'm supposed to be changing and growing. Yeah. So how about I do that?
So find what that is.
Yeah.
Eat a little bit of the mac and cheese. It's fine.
Yeah, but there's better things.
Yeah.
And it's like, ultimately, don't be so scared of growing. Yeah. It's not that bad.
Yeah.
It's not.
There's something about the sound of an old-timey cash register that really takes me back.
I know. It sounds like someone is about to hand me an ice cream cone, but it also sounds like we just sold some merch.
That's right. And if you're a Shopify user like us, you know that this sound means you just made a sale.
Shopify has helped millions of businesses sell their products online, but did you know they also offer the same support for brick and mortar stores?
From accepting payments to managing inventory, they have everything you need to sell in person. So give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify.
Shopify POS tracks sales across all your locations. That way, you'll always know what you have in stock and where.
They also provide reliable tech that fits your unique retail needs, like turning a tablet into a credit card reader.
And if you're looking to reach new customers, check out Shopify's marketing tools. They're easy to use, and they integrate with all social media platforms.
With Shopify, we have a powerful partner for managing our sales. And if you're a business owner, you can too.
Do retail right with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period today at shopify.com/murder. And here's the important note, that promo code is all lowercase.
So go to shopify.com/murder and take your retail business to the next level.
That's shopify.com/murder. Again, don't forget, the code is all lowercase.
Goodbye.
Georgia, have you ever been blown away by the most simple dish at a restaurant, like perfectly scrambled eggs?
Oh my God, yes, Karen. And then all I want to do is make that dish at home and eat it every day.
Well, you probably could, as long as you have the chef's secret ingredient, Made In cookware.
Made In was created to bring restaurant quality performance kitchenware to home chefs around the world.
For years, they've built their business by supplying restaurants and top chefs with high-end cookware. Some of Tom Colicchio's most treasured dishes at his restaurant Craft are made in Made In.
Whether you're cooking for professional critics or just the critics you live with, your meals will benefit from the quality of Made In products.
Like their carbon steel cookware, it combines the best of both cast iron and stainless steel clad, so it's rugged enough for grills or an open flame. It's the MVP of summer cookouts and cook-ins. What I really love about Made In cookware is that it actually makes something like having a Memorial Day barbecue much more convenient, because you can keep everything on the grill. If you need to throw, say, a pan of garlic up on the top while you're grilling your steaks on the bottom, it's strong enough, durable enough to do that.
If you want to take your cooking to the next level, remember what so many great dishes have in common. They're all made in.
Save up to 25% this Memorial Day from May 18th through May 27th when you visit madeincookware.com.
That's madeincookware.com. Goodbye.
So this is from CC Lewis. Is there anything you are wishing you had not written now that it's out, or the reverse of this? And just a comment, Georgia, I don't know how many times I have heard you talk about Kim's observation of the altar of self-doubt, but I've always been like, yeah, got it. Have some confidence, got it. But after reading your fuller thoughts on this, I get it. So much more than a matter of self-esteem, but a call to jump in. Really jump in. Makes me happy to hear that she herself realized it was a breakthrough moment, like a goddamn real life Goodwill Hunting or Ordinary People. And it's a testament to your writing and explanation that I finally understood. Thanks, Stephen. You're a gem.
Thank you. That's so nice to hear. The thing about the writing the book is that we really wanted to come across and get our thoughts and feelings across. And especially in that chapter, when I'm writing about therapy and depression and anxiety and like the most prevalent, you know, part of my life, I really wanted to make it clear. So that was really fucking hard. And I think I'm happiest with that chapter than I am with any other chapters. I like Nice. Fuck politeness too.
And is there anything you regret writing?
No, I wrote about taking my top off for a photographer, and I'm so fucking glad I did.
Like, good.
I don't regret that at all.
You shouldn't, because that's the part people talk to you about a lot.
Yeah.
And that came up almost like, it feels like every interviewer people asked us about it.
Yeah.
Because I think it happens.
Yeah.
You know,
What about you?
There is no, at the end, first of all, I don't remember what I wrote and I haven't reread it. And in 10 years, I'll probably read it and then I'll be all happy and I'd be able to answer any question you want. But I think the way that came out, I kind of honor the, that's how it is with making stuff and creativity sometimes. It has to come out as it comes out and you don't get to, it's not about it being this perfect thing or saying, making the perfect statement.
Yeah.
It's like, it's about getting out the thing that you need to say. Yeah. So, you know, part of me regrets all of it because that was private and I don't like that public life.
It's so exposed.
It's so exposed, but, and that's all I was kind of thinking about beforehand. But since we talked to people face to face, clearly it was exactly how it was supposed to happen.
Right.
So, yeah, not yet.
Good.
No regrets yet.
Good.
But I'll always hold out for some space for regret.
Oh, it's always got to be there. Karen.
Yeah.
This is from Jean Marie Gibson. Every time you talk or write about your mother, you share with all of us the joy, humor, and wit that she had and the honest struggles and hardships of her illness. I feel very honored that you have shared so much of her with us and trust us with her legacy. If you had to pick one word to sum up the wonder that is Pat Kilgariff, what word would you choose?
I mean, badass.
Yeah.
She really was like... And thank you. That's lovely. It's also when someone dies of Alzheimer's, they go away in slow motion. So writing those chapters about her, I got to remember her from like when she was like my active daily mom every day and really go into those memories. And it was like, you know, there's parts of our brain that when you think of something, you're there. It like really delivers you to that space and that time. And it got, I got to like take that chunk and then kind of put it and replace it with these, the more recent memories where I really didn't like that person, which there's a lot of guilt around that.
Yeah.
And people that have to be around relatives who have Alzheimer's, you don't like the sick person because they're really
them.
Hard to be around, and it isn't them.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Thank you for the reception of the my real version of my mom. Yeah, who was the opposite of how she was when she was sick. So there was just this real additional layer of the bummer, kind of.
Yeah. Well, it was great. I mean, we really got to know her in the book, and it was like fun.
And she. I can't tell you how much she would be loving this.
Aww.
Like, my mom was the mom that if you had dinner at our house when we were in high school, she would, like, whoever my friend was that she brought over for dinner, she'd be like, do you want a glass of wine? She was always, like, trying to be the cool mom and the fun mom and the, like, mom you could talk to.
Yeah.
And people really treated her that way. Like, she, people, my friends and my sister's friends would, like, confide in my mom and tell her problems. And my mom would just be like, hey, listen, here's the deal. You've got to blah, blah. Like, she was really good at it. So...
You know what I think that my reaction to my mom's text, part of that was like, I'm kind of, it makes me feel guilty and sad that it's my mom who gets to react to it and that's how she fucking does it. Instead, your mom would probably be like my dad, which is full of praise and proud and everything.
But that, I will remind you, not to argue, but that was one moment. She had lots of other reactions.
Yeah.
She was there at the book launch in New York, which, again, thank you everybody at Forge and Macmillan. They rented us. I don't know if we even got to talk about this because it was on break time, but rented us. We had the back room, like the private book room.
The rare books room.
At the Strand bookstore in New York City, which is a very big fucking deal to us anyway.
Yeah.
And Janet flew out and was there and was stoked. She was going around the room. She talked to everybody.
Took photos of just the most inane random. I know. She was so
she
proud.
She brought great mom energy to that day and like in a very grounding way where sometimes we go through this stuff and I'm just like, I don't know what the fuck's happening. It's like getting on an elevator and then you're just like, okay, bye. Okay.
Well, it's fun to watch it through other people's eyes too, because when like you see a friend or someone who's like I have a Emily Gordon, my friend, was at a family vacation and her like niece was like freaked out that we knew. And she was like, I didn't realize how crazy it was until my niece wants a signed copy of your book and couldn't believe that I know you.
Right.
Like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
I guess I just wish my mom had said something encouraging and nicer, because it's, you know, I feel bad that your mom doesn't get to enjoy it too. And yet, and then my mom swoops in with some fucking political comment.
Look, though, that's just, this is where we are.
Yeah.
And, you know, who knows? My mom could have said something passive aggressive. Yeah. Like, she was no fucking saint. There were definitely minuses. Like, you know, it's not that.
Yeah.
It's not that. I know Janet, like, Janet's super proud of us, and she was thrilled after that.
Here's another one for you.
Okay.
Karen, did you find it easy to date again after divorce? I'm going through a divorce now and feeling ready to date, but I don't know how to shake the weird guilt I feel. And this is from V. McTernan.
Oh my God, that's a great question. I don't know if I'm the best person to ask, though, because before, like, I've never dated. I was a comic and an alcoholic. So I came up in my 20s.
So you were in a catch.
Basically, yes. Who wants to take me home? So it was always just like, suddenly there was a guy that didn't leave, is what it felt like to me. So when I would say, not only did I find it hard to date after I got a divorce, I had no idea what was going on. On top of which, and this is something, I don't know how old you are. What's her name? V?
Uh-huh, V.
But times have changed. And like, even in a very short amount of time, like 5 years, I made a joke to this guy once about, hey, now you can call me. And his face dropped. It was as if I had gotten down on one knee and asked him to marry me. And that's when I realized, oh, no one calls each other anymore. It's only texting. Texting and apps and distance and ghosting. And if I like you, I'm going to wait 2 weeks, but I probably won't even get a hold of you anyway.
Because there's someone better out there and I want to date them.
Yes. It's a fucking nightmare. Yeah.
So if you meet someone you like,
freak
go
out.
For it. Yeah. Freak out and
start
go for
screaming.
It. Yeah. But don't, I'd say then don't jump into it like with everything, because like go slow probably.
Go slow and also, save it. Like, I mean, I'm still talking about my therapist about it, because there was a time where I said to her, like, I just won't be able to. So unless someone literally rings my doorbell, I can't do this.
Well, I think that's a good thing to say, too, is that to let your close friends and trusted friends know that you're dating again. So if they know of anyone, keep you in mind.
Yes.
And that way you're not doing the apps. You're not trying to meet someone at a bar cold turkey, which is, you know, they're thinking of you and thinking of their single friends. And
right. And also, here's something I think is really helpful, and I can't remember if I read this or someone said it to me, but it only really works out once, twice, if you're lucky, three times at all.
Yeah.
So you can't get discouraged every time someone isn't into you or you're not into another person.
That's a great point.
It rarely works out. So if it finally does, just know that it's like, you should expect either rejection or disappointment. It's kind of the name of the game.
Yeah.
Try to have fun in the meantime. Keep it light.
Yep.
Keep it light and keep it moving. And you know, finally we developed the plan. I think my friend Bradford and I always have five crushes. So that if somebody disappears or lets you down or whatever,
Who cares?
Just fucking move on down the line.
I love it.
And do that until it feels like you shouldn't do that anymore.
Yeah. I met Vince 3 months after I ended my engagement.
Really?
With my ex. 3 months later, and I was dating someone else. And I met him, and like that night was like, sorry, dude, we're not dating anymore. I was like, this guy.
Yes.
Yeah. You never know when it's going to. That's the thing, too. I always tell my friends, too, is like it takes one. It could be one night that changes it all.
Yes.
You know, it's not like you have to. It's going to be the next 2 years of your life. You could randomly fucking run into someone and meet someone and suddenly you're with them now, you know?
Yes.
It's like you just don't know.
So with that being said, and let's just keep on talking about this.
Great.
But the one thing I do like either regret or try to keep aware of now is I am a huge, along with, you know, all of my addictions and food and alcohol and whatever, I'm a huge isolator. It's like I get overwhelmed and that's all I can do. It's just like, everybody leave me alone. You have to go out and just be around. You don't have to go on dates. Just be in public. Just go to the movies with your friends.
Yeah.
Spend time with people. stay social. Don't, because really what I ended up doing was I was completely isolating. And then the times where I would meet someone that I liked, it became this huge deal that felt like I can't handle how big this is.
Because you had no other life. That was like, you were relying on this person to be your life. And that is so scary and overwhelming. But when you have this big full life with friends and options and crushes, then that one dude that you meet that maybe isn't that great even.
You don't know. You can't know until you know. And also when you come at someone with that energy, even if they think you're the coolest person in the world, they will run the fuck away.
That's right.
When it's like, it's you, the one that's going to save me.
I hate you.
Crazy person.
All right, you go.
Oh, this is good. This is from Sherry. What's the story of how you got sweet baby angel Paul Giamatti to do the audiobook? You said in the previous Q&A how hard it was to write the book. How hard was it to record the audiobook to read your written words? The book is great, but you really need to get the audiobook and hear... Oh, she's just talking to everybody. And hear Georgia and Karen and Paul tell you the stories. Aww. So much more emotional hearing it than reading it for me.
Thank you. Karen's joked about Paul Giamatti a few times in like a, if who's going to play you in a movie of her life? Karen says Paul Giamatti. And then we were being asked, oh, are you guys going to record the audiobook?
Right.
And on Twitter and shit, which I think drove you crazy.
Well, yeah, it was just like, what else do we do but talk into microphones and our own book? But so I made the very sarcastic joke that it would be Paul Giamatti reading the audiobook. And then I would say it was like a couple months later. Mm-hmm. It wasn't immediate. I woke up one morning and had an email in my inbox from Paul Giamatti, which was, and it was basically him saying, hey, I heard you guys talked about me. I'm so honored. I love the show. Mm-hmm. And, which was, of course, in and of itself, crazy and awesome.
And you thought it was fucking fake, which I
thought it was fake because I come from a long line of 90s comedians who absolutely would do that to you, make you answer, and then make fun of you for being excited. So I started to write back an email that said, hey, you know what? Fuck you, whoever this is, because I didn't recognize the email. And it was like, whoever this is, you're a dick, and like, fuck you. And then I, thank God, hit pause and was like, now hold on, because who knows?
Because this life has been fucking crazy the past couple of years. Exactly. So it could be Paul Giamatti.
It could. Don't tell Paul Giamatti to fuck off yet. Like, put a 48-hour hold
on. Make sure it's actually Paul Giamatti you're telling to fuck off and not some random comedian.
Really get specific. But, so when I finally answered the email, I basically said, this is thrilling. We think you're the best. And if you do want to know why we were talking about you, and if you do want to be a part of the audiobook, we would love it. Sorry to be gross and
ask you for something
Hollywood ask, but might as well do it. And he immediately wrote back, I'd love to, sounds great. Like, it was the easiest booking in the world. And then he actually came through and did it, which, I mean, we weren't there for it.
No, we haven't met him yet.
We don't, he just did this thing
this
for
like
us.
Favor for it was a favor
it was a huge favor. And he has, what are you,
billions,
he has billions, millions. Is it billion?
Billions. He's millions and billions of dollars, probably.
he has plenty of shit to do.
Yeah.
And he took the time. We still haven't sent him like a gift basket or anything. We talked about
Steven,
sending him a muffin basket.
Steven, get him an edible arrangement. Jay.
Can you send...
I love Steven was like, that's not my fucking job
now
anymore.
Now, we called Steven and Steven calls Jay. That's now the order. I think the edible arrangement where it's pineapple dipped in dark chocolate is probably...
We're not going to scrimp.
No way. We're going to splurge on Giamatti.
That's right.
Every time I talk about Paul Giamatti, I think I've said this. My dad, if I mention his name to my father, my father says, have you ever heard about his father? And then he starts to lecture me about Paul Giamatti's father.
Who owned a baseball team, right?
He
is that
was
wrong?
The commissioner
of baseball.
Yeah, he was like a big deal in baseball, but he also was like a professor.
Jesus.
He's a big deal.
Okay.
And we love you, Paul Giamatti.
Thanks, Paul Giamatti. We love you. As for recording the audiobook, that was so intimidating because I'm such a huge audiobook fan, and I stop listening to books that have a narrator I don't like.
Right.
And I fucking hate my voice. And I've tried to listen to the audiobook a little bit on my own just to, fucking cross check. And God, it's annoying.
Right. I mean, of course. That's the age old thing is like the first time you hear your voice on an answering machine or something, and you're just like, no, don't let that be me. I also cried recording the audiobook. Of course, I was supposed to record the first chapter first, and it was the mom chapter, and it was 9 a.m. and I, God, the poor sound guy, the recording engineer, I wish I remembered
Kevin?
His name.
I'm going to say Kevin.
It's not Kevin. Something Kevin-y. He was like, I felt so bad. I was just like, sorry, can I do a different chapter first? He's like, yes. Like, oh
no,
my
he
God.
Was sweet.
He didn't want to get into it.
Our friend of the show, Shmoo, okay, says, Karen, your Latchkey Kid chapter made me laugh really hard. Was your sister involved in writing that chapter? If not, how did she react when she read it? Is that how she remembered those hours after school?
That is such a good question. Mm-hmm. Because, interestingly enough, I wrote that chapter at my sister's house.
Oh, that must have helped.
Yeah. It. I think it was either Christmas or Thanksgiving or some kind of a holiday that we were on 6 months
behind. Deadline, yep.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about that, how we were constantly and always 6 months behind in that book. But
And I kept being like, well, Karen hasn't turned anything in, so I don't have to turn anything in. And I'm going to wait till Karen turns something in before I turn something in.
Yep. It was the great standoff. Yep. The editor loved it. Yeah. She thought it was precious. So... Yeah, I got the idea of that because I was staring at the title, which is How to Be a Latchkey Kid. Mm-hmm. And then I was just like, the pictures that were coming into my head were so specific. It was the second house we lived in Petaluma on Eastman Lane. It was like, it was where all the main memories happened to me. Mm-hmm. Like it's always set there in my mind. And so, and I could think of like, you know, 20 different things that would happen constantly. And I just suddenly was like, tell people, think of the children who would never be latchkey kids,
right,
who have no idea what this even means. Explain to them moment by moment.
Yeah, because it's so normal to you. It was your childhood. But then when you realize that some people don't even know what that is.
Have never been like left alone like that.
Jim Kilgariff, for example. Oh, wait, because then she did write, also wrote, what was your dad's reaction? And then she said, basically, I just want to know everything about that chapter.
I had my sister read the first pass, basically, but she was like, yeah, that's good. She did one of those, which the reason she's like that is the reason I'm like this. Like, mm-hmm. She has never, no one in my family has ever given me praise or approval. And that, so I'm always like, what if I did it this way? I reread it and realized that I went out of the voice of it and went back in and fixed it. And then she was, you know, but then she didn't care. She's a single mother. She has way better stuff to do.
My sister, so we both have big sisters who are pretty close in age with us, and she got sad and couldn't finish it. And I think it's partly that I write about so many of the bad things I did and bad things I went through, like drugs and, you know, going with strange men to the top of a fucking mountain and taking my shirt off.
Yep.
And as my big sister, she feels responsible and that she should have protected me. But she's 18 months older than me and going through her own shit. And it just like, it's, you know, you were my big sister, but we were both embroiled in our own crap. So I feel kind of bad that it bummed her out.
I mean, I feel like that's true. That's like how it's really hard. All those stories it's not like, and then I won first prize.
Yeah, no.
There's
no first prize.
Win any shit in that.
I barely got my high school diploma.
Yeah. And it is hard. Those are the parts. It's like writing about the juiciest parts of life are the hardest parts.
Yeah.
And it makes sense that the people that were with us don't want to go and sit in it with us.
Also, can I say, I didn't thank her husband in my thank you. So I just want to thank Andy right now.
Oh, good.
You're a great brother-in-law. Apologies.
I think you only did family, though, right?
Yeah, but he's family.
Oh, true.
I did my sister-in-law, too.
Blood.
I've known her for fucking 20 years. Andy, God, can you leave me alone? Jesus.
All these demands you keep making.
Okay. Did I just ask that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Kay Mooney, 22, says, just wanted to say that I've been putting off finishing the last chapter because I love the book so much. I love that. That's the ultimate compliment. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful and felt just like the podcast, like my friends were indulging me in all of their life mishaps in a beautiful, vulnerable, incisive way. So proud of you guys. So proud of you guys.
Sorry. Thank you. So proud of you guys.
So proud of you guys. Questions. What was the hardest story to tell? Were there any moments or stories that you thought should be played down to protect someone? Mm-hmm. Like Georgia calling out her mom throughout. And what has been the best outcome from all the vulnerability you shared in the book? Bless.
Well, that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
God, there's just so much. I think the people who struggle with mental health, telling us that our frankness and our casualness about talking about it, it makes it like the stigma's gone of getting their own help.
Yes.
And I fucking love that so much. And if that's what our legacy is, I'm fucking, that's
hell yeah,
bigger than I could have ever imagined.
Yeah.
An impact I would have had on the world.
Totally.
I'm proud of that.
Yeah, you should be. It's very cool. And I like it because we didn't do it on purpose.
Totally.
Like, it wasn't this weird
contrived
plan. Yeah, yeah. It was just, I didn't realize how many people were so self-conscious about
yeah,
it or ashamed.
Yeah.
But that's because, you know, I don't know. I would say not the best outcome, because I'm not really sure about the outcomes, but I'll say the moment that it felt like it was more than just we put out this memoir, which is kind of how it felt like when we turned in the final draft. I was just like, get this away from me.
Yeah.
I don't know what this is even going to be. And we were in, I believe it was Toronto. Mm-hmm. And there were like 30 people from the booksellers.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And they all met us in the hallway. And the looks on their faces, the way they were holding the book.
Because the book hadn't come out yet. They were like getting their first copies because they were all booksellers.
That's right. So they were early.
Yeah.
They were early readers. And we kind of all said hi and nice to meet you and everything. And then one girl just goes, it was a really good book. And she said it like, I need you guys to understand. And it really, thank you so much. I'm sorry, I don't remember your name offhand. But it was that kind of moment where I went, oh, fucking thank God.
Yeah.
Like, she understood the need. And of course, we weren't going to ask that or whatever. But it was like, she really needed us to understand it. And thank God. And it was the best feeling, because it was like, yeah.
I agree. This is Gone Cyrillin. How do Karen and Georgia, it's you and me,
that's us,
remain so close? I feel like it would be difficult to maintain a healthy friendship after everything that has happened with their success. I'm truly envious of their friendship.
Oh.
Wasn't there a rumor going around that that we're not on a vacation, that we hate each other?
Yes. And the podcast is ending.
Which is hilarious, because we were in like our best, when that got spread, we were at like our best place in our friendship, I feel like, too. We're like texting each other gifts all the time.
Yep.
And like, you know, I don't think we've gone more than a week without texting, even when we're mad at each other and we're fighting about something. We still need to start texting. And I kind of love that, like, I think we're in a fight, and then I show up at the office to record something with you, and we're both just like, hey, how are you? What's going on? It's like, it breaks this tension that for me is really hard, because I can hold a grudge and I can be a bitch and be like, you do not get to see the cool Georgia part of me. You know, you don't deserve it.
Yeah.
But when I walk in and we're both just like, oh, your hair looks cute. What are you doing? And I'm like, okay, we can dissolve this, the fighting, and just be like normal people, like sisters.
Yes. It's a sister thing. Friendship is like when you're a little more distant. And so it's like, can we get dinner on Friday? Where it's like, I've watched you eat so many times. I've watched you pick things on menu. I could order for you.
You could.
I mean, it was like being in the army or something.
Yeah.
We were forced together through great luck and wonderful success and whatever.
Like being in the army.
Yeah. You know it is. But yeah, so it's the time we spend together, we have insane, as I like to call them, peak experiences.
Yeah.
Like when we walk out on stage at live shows, you and I are having that shared experience that audience is giving us. And we've gone into these realms together. So I don't feel like I need to be like, hey, do you want to get brunch on Sunday? Because it's past that.
Right.
Why do I always remember lyrics to songs, Karen, that I haven't heard for years, but I always forget my email passwords?
I know, right? It's like our brains only want us to retain useless information, but with 1Password, that problem's solved.
1Password is an award-winning password manager that's trusted by families and large-scale companies alike.
If you're tired of being the person that everyone texts for a streaming login, hand that honor to 1Password. They let you share logins with people and with groups.
With 1Password, you can securely switch between any device type or operating system. That means if you're a family or business that uses both Mac and PC, you won't have trouble sharing your private data.
Don't let the name fool you. 1Password does more than just store passwords. It can autofill usernames, payment details, and personal information. And they notify you about potential data breaches.
For business operations, 1Password has a dedicated support team that will integrate its security tools into your existing workflow.
1Password saves everyone time, and we all know that time saved equals money saved. Your accounting department will thank you.
Don't just listen to us. 1Password was named Wirecutter's best password manager, and companies like Salesforce and IBM trust 1Password to secure their most sensitive information, so you can too.
Right now, our listeners get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/MFM.
That's 2 free weeks at 1Password.com/MFM.
1Password.com/MFM.
Goodbye.
Here, I have a good one, though. This is a good one.
Okay.
All right, here's another question. It's from Alice Yar. Let's be honest about the inevitable movie deal that's going to follow the book. Does she know something we don't know?
What?
So my question,
how the fuck would you shoot that movie?
Here's a good one. So the question is, who's the cast of SSDGM the movie? It's all toddlers with voices of grown-ups.
I mean, I would obviously love Lyanna Mormont from Game of Thrones to play me as a child.
Okay.
And then Sansa can play my sister. I don't know.
I don't know. Wait, there's no movie deal, guys. Write your local theater.
We don't know because, remember, did we tell that story of when we were interviewed? We went on the CBS This Morning with Gail King.
God, can we tell you guys real quick? Gail King is the most amazing woman we have ever met.
Guys.
You guys.
Did we even talk about this?
I don't think we've been recording
since then.
Steven
says no.
Great.
So when we went on that show, Gail King, I was trying to tell Georgia, here's how it's going to go. Because that's what I always want someone to do for me that no one ever does. So I always think she wants that, which I don't think she
does. Well, you've worked in live TV too, and I'm all nervous and crazy. And so you kind of calm me down. And this is great too about us is that we're never both nervous at the same time.
No.
One of us is freaking out and the other one's fine and calms the other person down and vice versa. So yeah. I was freaking out about being on fucking live television, as you would. And Karen's worked in live TV a lot. So she was like, here's how it's going to go.
There's going to be a producer that comes in, she'll brief us, blah blah blah. It'll be a little jarring because we're gonna actually see Gail and the other two hosts on the set, but don't worry, whatever. Well, 3 minutes into us being in hair and makeup, Gail King comes bounding in,
powerhouse,
going, literally went, Karen and Georgia,
yeah.
Like did a thing, and we were both like, our mouths are open.
Yeah.
And then she opened the book and she had made notes and notes about
bookmarks.
George's stories were in blue and notes about my stories were in red.
Yeah.
She had read the book. She had made notes, done research. It was like above and beyond.
Yeah.
Yes. What's the question?
Movie deal.
Oh,
movie deal.
So then the next day we went back and did the podcast that she hosted and we talked even more. And at the end of that, when she was walking out of the room, we were like, thank you so much. It was great to meet you. And then she was like, movie deal. She did that.
If she does it, then she knows.
This was from Taylorino. This is book related. This is how it starts. This is book related.
Uh-huh.
How was doing that interview photo shoot for the Hollywood Reporter? P.S. Y'all look like $4 million.
Oh,
cute.
I thought, I love a photo shoot, man. There's nothing I love more than getting fucking dolled up and photographed. Don't like looking at the photos after, but I think it's super fun.
I was in hell. The people couldn't have been nicer. We were at
Edendale
Grill, which is gorgeous.
Yeah.
Used to be an old firehouse. It's the coolest restaurant.
Yeah. But were you happy with how it turned out?
I didn't look at it.
You haven't looked at the photos?
No, I just gave...
We look hot, dude.
Oren gave me like 3 copies.
Uh-huh.
And I just gave them to my dad and my sister.
Oh, you look hot.
Great. I mean, I'll never see it. That's just...
Oh, Karen.
It's just where we are right now.
I got it.
But I will say this. It was an honor.
Okay, here's one for you.
Okay.
This is from Katz BB. Karen, what made you decide to write your chapter on the Canadian alderman and mention Paul Bernardo? Fun fact, my uncle was one of his prison guards while he was on suicide watch when he was first arrested.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess because when we very first talked about doing that book, it was obviously they wanted the original voices that were like, helping us, there was suggestions of there should be really strong true crime kind of themes running
right.
through it. And we were, I think that also added to the delay when we didn't start writing it for so long was because it didn't feel right to,
yeah.
It isn't what we do. We're not true crime journalists.
Right. We write reports based on other people's journalism.
Yes.
You know, which we're very aware of.
Yeah.
So then to just pretend to be crime journalists just wasn't in our brains.
Yeah. And it wasn't something that came easily, but in talking, that's my friend, Paul Greenberg's story that I talked about, because it was basically my friend Paul Greenberg is from Toronto, and his mother had essentially a hometown where Paul Bernardo stalked her while she was swimming in her pool.
Oh, yes.
And she was older. She was in her like 60s or 70s.
Creepiest story.
And I remember when my friend Paul told me that story, and I just freaked out and was like, it's the best story. It's in the book, whatever. I love it. So in telling that, then it was like, then I wanted to draw in, and I'm sure Ali Fisher, our editor, made this suggestion too, because she was like, well, you've done this, so you might want to pull in some of the things that you learned when you were writing that.
Right.
I think I did that Paul Bernardo, Carla Homolka, when we were in Toronto, because I used an article that a woman wrote that was amazing. She wrote an amazing article about him and how all that happened. And I drew from that. So it was like, I realized that was a chance to kind of pull in all these like cool writers, cool points. And it seemed to kind of get all of that taken care of in one spot, which is back in the day, which now it doesn't seem like that long ago, but like in the 80s, when people were faced with like a loose serial killer, serial rapist in their town, what they came up with was every lady stay home.
Yeah.
And that is the old way, that's the old way of criminal justice, the old way of law enforcement.
Yeah.
And that idea that I can't speak to anything about criminal justice or law enforcement in a real way, but I can quote other people that I think this whole wave of true crime popularity is about women going, yeah, we're not only are we not fucking staying home, but we're going to help solve these cases.
Well, I think it's important that what you're writing it from a place of someone who has been scared of these things before as a woman and as a human being out in the world. It's, you know, we're talking about our own fears and our own anxiety and our own fucking reactions and angers to bullshit like that. So that's what we can do and we can offer.
And thank you for mentioning it, because I was really worried about that, because that was one I had to like footnote. And then the lawyer was like, we have to make sure, because I didn't want anybody to feel persecuted or anything.
Yeah.
But also, like, let's make sure that doesn't happen anymore by saying it happened in the past.
Right.
But yeah, that was a worrisome chapter.
Because you had to get shit right, or it's in there in writing.
Yes, exactly.
Like Nora's misspelling of her name.
That is the craziest, funniest thing.
Yeah.
They, in this first edition, someone slapped an H on the end of my niece's name.
In the dedications.
In the dedications. Her name is spelled N-O-R-A. And of course, when I told her, she was like, that's okay. Like, she could give a shit.
It's a collector's item now. It's a collector's item.
Yeah, it's not.
It's not. Well, so the next 3 weeks, we're going to be posting the top three episodes that you guys chose in the fan cult.
Yeah.
Of all time. We're really excited to see what you guys pick.
Yeah, that's
and
very cool.
Then we're back.
And then we kind of come back.
That's right.
Thank you guys for all of this. You know, we do get very, I especially get very self-conscious, but thank you for your grounding comments and support and questions. Ultimately, what you should know is that we've been having a really good time. This has been
the vacation or
amazing. I think the whole thing.
Yeah.
I think the whole experience.
The whole experience is surreal still. I still can't wrap my brain around it. I still get so excited to get, you know, when a murderino comes up to me and recognizes me. Like, it's just exciting every time. This whole fucking thing is...
It's very fun. And it's more than just, I talked to someone named Stephanie in Bloomingdale's the other day for like 10 minutes, who stopped me and was like, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I was just like standing
around. I'm immediately like in the middle of going to hug them as soon as they're like, are you Jordan? And I'm like, hugging you.
So yeah, we're very grateful and thank you for the support. I honestly was so scared that this book was going to suck shit.
Oh, I thought we were going to get like on BuzzFeed about what monsters we are.
Thank you. Stay sexy.
And don't get murdered.
Goodbye.
Elvis, want a cookie?